Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Insulate your home and save on energy costs. Owens Corning Pink Foamular Insulation Panels are moisture resistant and can be used anywhere, including walls, attics, and basements. Foamular Insulation Panels are available in multiple sizes to fit your project. Visit Menards.com to shop all foam board insulation. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Responsible Luxury Podcast, a space where we connect with the leaders, culture changers, creatives, tastemakers, and founders who are reshaping the future of luxury. I'm your host, Lauren Petrovic, and I wanted to thank you for joining me here. In today's episode, I'm taking you behind the scenes of a really special conversation I had the honor of moderating at the Fashion Institute of Technology during their 19th annual Sustainable Business and Design Conference. The panel was called Powering the Next Generation of Responsible Luxury. And let me tell you, the energy in the room was incredible, filled with students, leaders, and creatives, all asking the same thing. How do we close the loop on materials and redefine legacy through upcycling, reuse, and intentional sourcing? On the panel, I was joined by three incredible women I deeply admire: Tiffany Stevens of IGI, Malia McNaughton of Made by Malia, and Wendy Waugh of Golden Collective, each bringing a distinct perspective from jewelry, fashion, and sustainability. We covered so much, from the human side of the supply chain to what it really means to embed sustainability into your business from day one, to how we make luxury more inclusive and future ready. At the heart of it all, this conversation was about leadership, intention, and the power of interconnection across our industries. You'll hear personal stories, on-the-ground insights, a few bold truths, and some powerful ideas for how we can all play a role in shaping the industry. Whether you're a student, a founder, a designer, seasoned executive, or simply curious about where the future of luxury is headed, this conversation is for you. So let's get right into it.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Lauren Petrovic, founder of Laurenti New York, a bespoke fine jewelry company. I'm also the host of the Responsible Luxury Podcast, that is a platform for uniting today's extraordinary leaders shaping the future of luxury. Today, I am so excited to be back at FIT and moderate this panel on leading change, powering the next generation of responsible luxury. Luxury has always been synonymous with excellence, craftsmanship, and heritage. Today, more than ever, it must also stand for responsibility. The expectations of the luxury consumer are changing. They are more conscious, more informed, and they're demanding more from the brands that they engage with. I open up with a statistic around how a recent report by Deloitte found that 73% of global luxury consumers say that sustainability influences their purchasing decisions, yet only 20% feel that luxury brands are truly transparent about their sustainability efforts. This tells us something important. Sustainability is no longer a niche concern, it's a market shift. The shift is not just a challenge, it's an opportunity to transform. The question is no longer if luxury brands should adapt, but how. How do we continue to innovate while honoring heritage? How do we ensure supply chain transparency without compromising desirability? And how do we maintain the aspirational essence of luxury while prioritizing ethics, sustainability, and inclusivity? Responsible luxury is about how can we lead better businesses, lead better lives, and create a more conscious and flourishing framework for this next generation. And I have three remarkable women here who can touch every part of this topic. As you listen today, I encourage you to reflect on the role we all have in shaping responsible luxury and how interconnected our industries are and we as people in this larger ecosystem. At the core, our challenges are universal, and by coming together, we can drive meaningful change. So with that, please join me in welcoming our incredible panelists, Tiffany Stevens, Chief Business Officer at International Gemological Institute, Malia McNaughton, CEO and founder of Made by Malia, and Wendy Waugh, founder of Golden Collective. I'd love to start by asking each of you to give a little bit about the mission behind each of your companies and what sustainability and responsible luxury means to you. Tiffany, we'll start with you.
Great. Thank you so much, Lauren. Thank you to everybody who put this conference together and for really highlighting these issues, which remain more important than ever. And it's just a really big honor to be here with you today at FIT. A lot of us here get to speak in a lot of different forums, but FIT is so iconic, and being able to be, especially with students, really interested too. I hope people will ask questions if we have time, and really interested to hear your perspectives and challenges to what we're bringing to the stage today. So I am the Chief Business Officer and Global Head of Sustainability for the International Gemological Institute. We are a gemological institute, so if you're buying jewelry and you get that piece of paper that tells you what it is, what the diamond is, what the characteristics are, etc., that comes from us. We have gemologists on hand who examine jewelry and make sure that it is what it says it is. We also have educational programs to train gemologists. We operate in 10 countries around the world. We've been around in the U.S. for about 50 years now. I think our mission is to tell the truth and to be accurate. And I think, now more than ever, sustainability really fits within that broader mandate, that what you're getting is what you say it is, and that it comes from a place that you can trust and you can feel good about.
Good morning. I echo what Tiffany said about FIT and this panel and this conference, and I thank you all for inviting me here. I am the founder of Made by Malia. I'm also a gemologist, and my mission for my brand is really to educate the consumer. I've had the privilege over the last couple of years to travel the world between Botswana, South Africa, India, and my goal really in doing so, in addition to seeing those beautiful countries, was to be able to speak to sustainability from a firsthand experience. So not just reading what is fed to me via whether you want to call it propaganda or not, but to actually be on the ground and really understand what sustainability looks like for an independent jeweler like myself. And that's really allowed me to give firsthand account to my customers who are looking for bespoke, unique jewelry that is inspired by nature, and being able to actually tell them. I was able to go to the source and find these products for them. I also think that is really important that consumers understand the process, so that's why I want to educate them about the jewelry industry. So that's my mission.
Hi everyone, I'm Wendy, and I am the founder of Golden Collective Incorporated. I'm really honored to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I have a lot of experience in the fashion world, and I started Golden Collective 6 weeks ago. Really new. So it's kind of like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this, but I am. And I have the knowledge I have in the fashion world is the building of companies. Most recently, I was at Theory for a very long time and worked on building Theory in terms of the company it is today. And also the last maybe 8 years at Theory was focused primarily on sustainability. So what I want to do with Golden Collective is A, share my knowledge, B, help everybody embed sustainability into the thinking. And in addition to that, I have an upcycling project. I'm going to speak a little bit more about all these things later, but I really want to be here to share what I know. So thank you.
And we have such a powerful panel here, and I'm really excited to dive right into. So thinking about industry trends and challenges, each of us come from such different corners of the industry, and also broader luxury industry, Wendy coming from fashion. I want to talk more about some pressing opportunities and challenges facing the industry today. Wendy, we'll start with you.
I'm going to focus it on sustainability, because one of the most important parts of the challenge that brands have is understanding who's in your supply chain. And really, but not just who your factory is. And since I'm talking about fashion, or who your fabric maker or yarn maker is, but also, you know, who's spinning it? Who's spinning the yarn? Where does it actually come from? Where are the raw materials coming from? If we understand who really is in our supply chain, then we can have a better understanding of what our impact is. Once we have that understanding, we can work to try to reduce the impact that we have. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that later, you know, with the Tier 4 farmers. But it's really critically important. It's not an easy thing. What I'm saying, it's like, oh, it sounds so easy, right? Not. You know, especially for large companies. You know, it might be easy for them to understand, you know, the factory and the fabric mill, which would be basically called Tier 1 and Tier 2. But it's really hard to get into the other tiers, simply because of the way we have, as an industry, orchestrated the business. So how do you dig into it? And I think it's about asking questions. It's about educating everybody in the supply chain. And what I've found throughout the years is that they may say, no, I don't know, I'm not going to tell you. Then it's like, okay, let's talk about this. So I think it's really important to, you know, to have an intention to really understand what your impact is, and the impact your suppliers are going to want to know your impact as well. But the supply chain is critically, critically important.
What's so interesting also is, like we said in the beginning, the challenges really are universal because, yes, we are talking about fashion, but these same issues also exist in the diamond and jewelry space, which Tiffany and Malia have a lot of experience about, going deep upstream into the supply chain and going where maybe other consumers may not know what happens, you know, behind the curtains. So I'll let you guys take it.
Yes, I would agree. I think there's so much overlap between the fashion and the jewelry world. And actually, my background is fashion, luxury fashion. So I think that kind of is a great mixture for me, because I have a fundamental understanding of the supply chain from the fashion world. And that's what I was able to bring over into the jewelry world. And I think it boils down to understanding, for me, like Wendy was touching on, about understanding the human component of all of this, right? And understanding from mine to market, how does this really impact the end consumer? And I think for me, about 30% of my customers are upcycling their jewelry from heirlooms that they want to reset. It's been sitting in the jewelry box for their family member. If they had a family member who untimely passed away, you know, they want to carry that piece with them, but maybe that piece does not fit their everyday aesthetic, but it has this new meaning because they're able to upcycle it into something, you know, that they will cherish and wear forever, and it has an additional story. So that's my way and my contribution of adding to something bigger, a larger story. I think that's really important for the consumer to understand that they can play a part in that way, right? And so that's the part that I think I play as a small contributor in this very large market. I sit on multiple panels all the time, and it's almost like I'm small in the microcosm of, you know, the larger conversation, but when I'm speaking to a consumer and I'm able to tell them that's the impact they can have, I do feel that that is, you know, if replicated, it can have a large impact.
And Tiffany?
Sure. I think, you know, sitting here thinking about this, I think about how the sustainability realm really was like a marketing thing or lived in the marketing department of a lot of these companies for a long time. And it shifted into the legal department, which I'm a recovering lawyer. I think that's a good thing because it gives it teeth in real reality. I'm sure a lot of you guys who are interested in this might know about like all of these different reporting standards that are out there, and then by governments. And then there's also a lot of social and different kinds of audits that you can opt into depending on your industry. In jewelry, we have a couple. In fashion, there are many more. So I think there's multiple dimensions to this now. There's the good intention of wanting to tell the story about it, the good things that you are actually doing, but then you've got to peel back the layer and actually be able to prove that you are doing these things. And I think that it's getting even more intense. The engineers are now getting involved with blockchain and traceability and making sure, you know, again, that we're doing what we say we're doing. And the accountants, like the way that we're now doing greenhouse gas accounting, is like living in the finance department. So it's becoming, you know, gone from this kind of marketing thing to being more rhizomatic and sort of existing across lots of different functions and companies. And just by chance, last night I was at Joan Hornig's house, who's affiliated with FIT pretty intensely, I think, and she was hosting a conversation about this organization called Transparent M. And this is an organization that was founded by an investigative journalist. So he goes to the sources source, so like the sort of scope three level of things, and does like investigative journalism and research for like a year in secret, and then goes to the brands and says, your sources source, your factory's factory, this is what they're doing. We're going to go tell the New York Times unless you fix it. So that's another powerful part of the ecosystem. And I think it takes all of it in order for us to actually achieve what we say we're trying to achieve. And I think some of the work that he's doing isn't necessarily always like bad intentions, like Wendy was talking about. The reality for a lot of the luxury supply chain is that maybe 20% of your vendors are long-term relationships where you know the place and you go multiple times, and maybe like up to 80% of them are these more short-term transactional relationships where things are just getting done. And so, you know, you think everything's good. Maybe you've even done an audit that happens once a year or once every other year, but it takes this other kind of like mechanism of people really going in on the ground and understanding what's going on to make sure that there's real truth to what we're trying to claim in the marketplace.
And adding to that also, I think that more often in the diamond jewelry space, you have that longer lifetime relationship. I feel like with fashion, of course, at a certain level with fashion, it's like, again, just those very transactional relationships where it's very short term. And I, go ahead, jump in.
I was going to say, I think that's a really important point. The companies that I've worked for, you know, they've developed relationships with their factories, and it has been the same people for a long, or fabric mills, same people for a long, long, long time, like 24 years or so. And I think that that's so critically important to making this change and understanding what our impact is to really develop the relationships. We are, I mean, all the points that you made are so valid. It's like, we do need to be looking at, A, what we're doing, what are people really doing, who's really in it, in your supply chain, and then how do we make these changes? What changes do we need to make in terms of like how we buy things, you know, how we operate, that are going to, A, help reduce our emissions, but also it will help, you know, people.
That's a perfect segue into the next question, which is, can we talk about some successful models that have worked with sourcing raw materials, whether that's diamonds, gemstones, fabrics?
As a matter of fact, one of the things that I think is really important is understanding the supply chain, as I said, but getting all the way back to who is the raw material source. And I've had the great opportunity over the last number of years to really find out who some of these farmers are. And when you talk about the personal touch with the people in your supply chain, I have since learned that, A, the farmers that we've been working with, or the company I was at was working with regarding, let's say, cotton and wool, they're really very focused on what is their impact, you know, what is the impact of the soil. There's farmers that I know that were taking a look at calculating what their carbon emission impact is for 1 kilo of wool. Another farmer was looking at trying to reduce his impact so he could end up being shipping, you know, really very low impact cotton, by a bale of cotton. So that's one thing. The other thing was they really wanted to have people know how they operate. They're not just, as a matter of fact, a farmer in Australia said to me, I want people to know that you tell them, we're not just dumb farmers. You know, this is done with a lot of science. You know, when do we move the sheep from one paddock to another? How do we keep the soil healthy? What do we need to do to keep nutrients in the soil? How do we really take, you know, more carbon out of the atmosphere and sequester it so it stays there? There's all these scientific questions that they're really working on. So it's really, it's fascinating, and I never thought I'd be in fashion talking about soil health. But it's like, I thought fashion was about clothes. And it is. But the more you learn about this, the more you realize that there's these wonderful, incredible people as part of our supply chain. And it's almost like I want their voices heard as much as anybody else, as much as our customers, because it's like there's so much a part of this.
Sorry. I would say that Malia and I have both been very lucky to go to source countries and to see different mining operations. And I think anybody who's thinking about going into sustainability, I would really try to make sure that you get to go to the source, whatever that is, for whatever realm you're working in, as early as possible in your career, because that's really going to give you the credibility and the ability to speak about these things. Because if you haven't gone to the source or the factory, you have no idea what you're talking about. Until you see it, that's really what you need to build your own credibility on, I think. But, you know, I think for jewelry, I don't know if any of you guys are interested in jewelry. You are? Okay, good. We're both like obsessed, obviously, and we're like the little voice inside the larger fashion context, but we love jewelry so much. So here's a big encouragement. Please go into jewelry. So people don't throw away jewelry, right? So if fast fashion is the problem, we're the slowest fashion of all. No one throws it away. We don't have piles of burning gold rings anywhere. But the reality is our stuff comes out of the ground. And we have to reckon with that, and we have to be real about that and think about how to make sure that we're benefiting these resource-rich countries as much as possible and not, you know, creating more karmic cycles of exploitation. So I would say one case study from my day job is we partner with the Cruzeiro mine in Brazil. They're a tourmaline mine, and they're a group of miners got together and bought the mine many years ago. And so they're just by in their DNA, they care about the community and their own people because it's like their family and friends and their own community. So we've partnered with them. And of course, I got to go and see the mine, and they do all of this environmental work around the mine. And that's all great. And I got to see it. And okay, you can trust me because I've been there. But the thing that we've done in the last couple months that's really exciting is, I was talking about the engineers a minute ago. There's an engineer in our industry who does a blockchain sustainability product that she's developed. And so they're a small mine, but we got them connected to her, and she's gone and done a site visit and an audit and has uploaded everything onto her blockchain. So that enabled them to now start selling to the largest public company in the U.S. that sells jewelry. So they've gone from this sort of, you know, because a lot of times these sustainability things get stuck in this like little pilot project mode, but bringing the technology in has allowed them to play at a much higher level and benefit themselves economically and their entire community by having a larger reach. So sustainability, of course, it's important. It makes us feel good about the world, but it can have really positive economic impacts for the source communities as well.
And if I can just add to that, I think exactly what Tiffany said, by going to Botswana, for example, and seeing the impact of the diamond industry on the country in a positive way, from the schools that are provided to the communities, to the how they maintain the wildlife there. You know, the cradle of humanity is based in Botswana, and so you think about how the diamond industry is helping to preserve a lot of the nature and wildlife there. And so that's the way that you can additionally see the impact in the work that you do. And because of all of the, like the Kimberley process and all of those other initiatives, the government is required to put back into the environment a certain amount each year. So I think those are the ways that I'm able to, by visiting, see the direct impact of sustainability.
And I want to say too, just starting off in your sustainability journey, I know for me, when I heard sustainability, I just thought it was about climate and the environment. But sustainability at its core is about doing business in the right way. It's about people, it's about the product, it's about the planet. And I also want to ask you guys about how we can encourage the reuse of materials and promote more responsible consumption and production in the luxury sector, whether that's directly with the product or maybe it's with the people internally, the company. But thinking about it from your guys' perspective as leaders, how would you share that?
There's two things I would answer. The first one is, obviously, as you know, in fashion, as design, is thinking about fabric, using more preferred fabric fibers, recycled product, et cetera, is a very important part. And seeing what they can be doing to use, you know, waste that's in the supply chain to create new fabric. So there's a number of things to do from that perspective. The other thing that I'm doing is taking a look at my own closet and seeing things that I've had in my closet since the 1990s.
Oh boy. Exhibit A. Tell everyone about the blazer.
I'm currently wearing a blazer from the 1990s, and it was double-breasted. It's now single-breasted. It now fits me. Before it did not. And I love it, really love it. And I've been doing this with a number of my clothes, so I've been taking things and basically upcycling them myself. I've been increasing their circumference so that it actually fits me. I've done it with some other designer outfits that I had from that time period. I've done it with jeans. I've done it with a number of different things. And it's like taking and refurbishing your own closet. So you now have new clothes, and they just happen to be really made well, or they're really fantastic fabrics. They fit, and they're one of a kind. So there's lots of opportunity that we don't even know in our own closet that we have. So I think that there's so many different ways to look at this, and I think it's so important to... I have a lot of clothes, probably because I've been in fashion, and I love them, so I haven't gotten rid of them. I don't want to sell this. I don't want to give this away. I want to do something with it, and I'm sorry I gave away the pants to go with this. I'm really sorry. It's like I wish I had them. I would have upcycled those, too. I would have had a great suit, but instead I have this fabulous jacket, which is very good. At any rate, so that's another way to look at this. Anyway, it's fun.
I love that. And I, too, have a lot of clothes, and I shop my closet often. And I do think it's important for you to evaluate what you already have, how you can, you know, work that into your wardrobe. But as it pertains to jewelry, like I mentioned in the beginning, going through your jewelry box, asking your family members, can you raid their jewelry boxes? Because I'm sure they have things in there that they just have forgotten about. And, you know, gold prices right now are insane. And so you can, you know, go to a refinery and melt your gold down, and you can either trade it in for cash, or you can make a new item out of it. And I think that's your way of adding to this larger conversation. And so that's the way that I like to kind of tell people you can do this, whether it's with fashion, whether it's vintage shopping, whether it's, you know, where's the camera, rent the runway, you know, which I like to partake in as a way of my contribution of how do I contribute to the larger conversation.
Yeah, I love that.
The job of a jewelry designer, independent jeweler, is more than just a small job, because you're actually making, I think, cultural artifacts. Because they're forever.
I think it's so powerful to take individual action, but it's also powerful to think about the systemic changes that need to happen in order for us to achieve these lofty goals. And so in addition to doing your own individual thing, you can add your voice to different initiatives that are going on across the world. Natalia and I from IGI are working with the Slow Fashion Caucus, which is a couple of members of Congress are coming together to shed light on some of these issues at the federal level. So, you know, you take your individual action and then make sure your voice is heard in some of the systemic things that are going on too, to change the whole system.
But I think a big role for us too is also bringing the right people together to create these solutions, because as the job of a leader or anyone leading into a new space, you have to get the right people together in the same room to have these conversations and start to find solutions. So diving into fostering more inclusiveness in companies, what are some of the challenges and opportunities for companies to integrate sustainability into their core values and business strategies?
That is a big challenge. And I think it's really critically important to embed sustainability into the thinking. One of the things that I had done in my career regarding sustainability was really have the development sourcing department kind of think about fabric in a way of, you know, you look at a fabric and you're a designer or fabric developer, and you think about, well, what's the content of this, what's the price of this, what's the weight of this, what's the width of this, but also just add on some other thing, questions. Like, those are the questions you ask just because that's what you're doing your job. But add on some things to doing your job, like, what is the supply chain? Is it a preferred fiber? Where does it really come from? Just as though it becomes second nature. And the more that happens in our organizations, the more things are going to start to shift and change. And it's not just in the sourcing area, but it's in all the other areas as well. So I think education is a very important part, and education as to, well, what are we doing and why? And I think the why is important also. I think people really do have to understand the impact. You know, we talk about it, and everybody will say, yeah, it's really, you know, climate change is really bad. But when you start to bring it back so that they can experience that, it's like, well, your average temperature in 2024 is X. I'm trying to get the actual numbers, and what it's targeted to be in 2100 is going to be another thing altogether, then all of a sudden you can say, wow, I understand what you're talking about. That's going to be horrible. So it's like once you really bring it so that people can understand why and they start to have an experience of it, then they're going to even sit up and take more notice of it. I think that's really important.
And another point we were talking earlier, too, about getting these integrated into everyday things. Like you were mentioning, like, people should be thinking about this. It's like brushing their teeth every day. It should just be daily and it should be routine. I like that.
And I think that's what's, you know, we're all slowly doing that and trying to have the teams think about it as just part of their thought process on a daily basis. So it's not a separate thing. It's not like its own, sustainability is not its own thing, because being its own thing, it's not going to happen. But being part of the company, part of your ethos, part of the daily list of things that you do, then all of a sudden I think things can start to shift and change. And it also, like when you're starting to do something, you know, it's in the beginning people would say, well, this is the fabric, this is the price, and oh, if you want it to be sustainable, then it's going to be this much more. No. It's like, this is the price, all included. So that then we start to really look at things. I know things are going to be different now with all these tariffs, so I can't even talk about that right now. I don't even know. But I'm just talking about how it would be good for us to really think about these things so that we can actually start to make changes.
Yeah. I wanted to ask Tiffany about sustainability when it comes to private equity groups like Blackstone and their viewpoints on it.
Sure. So our company is owned by Blackstone, which is a big private equity company. And you might think, you might have assumptions about what that means. I did before I joined. I think a really powerful answer to your question is that, so at Blackstone, they're very, very serious about ESG, like very serious. And they have doubled down on it in the last, since November. And so I have a separate person inside of Blackstone, and I have a separate set of KPIs, performance goals, based on ESG, and I have to track those and report to somebody at Blackstone New York. And if I ever encounter problems with the people who, from Blackstone, the separate people who run our company from Blackstone, they don't want to fund the, you know, maybe we don't have enough money for this after all, or this isn't a priority, I just go to her and say, they're giving me a hard time. And she calls them because she's above them in the org chart, and she says, get it together, we're doing this. And so that's kind of like what it takes, because when times get tough, like they are about, or they already are with tariffs, you know, it's easy for, if you don't have a truly powerful person who can stand up for these things, they can get swept under the rug or deprioritized. So if you guys are students, as you're thinking about your job and you're serious about this, it's worth inquiring, like, you know, how is it someone kind of closer to the top whose bonus depends on this, or who, you know, there's some real seriousness behind reaching these goals.
Did you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think for me, when I'm thinking about sourcing, I'm also thinking about how can I play a part in sourcing from different levels of companies. So I thankfully work with a manufacturer who is RJC certified, which is the Responsible Jewelry Council, and they handle all of the responsible sourcing and making sure that companies are actually following what they say they're going to do. But I also like to step outside of that a bit and work with smaller artisanal mines at times to source certain stones, because I want to contribute as an independent jeweler. I know you need to be thinking about how you can impact the communities that you source from. So I that's the part that I think I can play and that I try to play, is like from mine to market, going with larger players, but also niching down as well.
Yeah. I want to save time, make sure we have enough time for question and answers. So I want to shift into the future of what this next model of luxury is going to look like and ask each of you guys, how and what does a responsible luxury industry look like to you in 2030 and beyond?
I have this, you know, vision of sustainability is now embedded into organizations and people are now really starting to think about it. I do think we're moving in that direction. I think that there's more people are talking about responsibility. in the companies. I do think it's going to be challenging with all these tariffs coming into place. However, I think there's enough of us to keep the conversation happening. Once there's a conversation, then I think we will be able to move in that direction. And I also think it's important to all have a voice and to really see what we can do together and collaborate. Collaboration's an important part to this. So I think that, you know, I have a vision of people collaborating also. So I have these, you know, they might be a little idealistic, but I think we have to have that. The more we have that, the more we talk about it, then the more we're going to start to move in that direction.
I think companies nowadays don't have a choice. Consumers, like the statistics you presented in the beginning, are demanding this, right? The core of my business comes from consumers who are looking for a brand that they can identify the person behind the brand. So I have to be forward facing because people want to know exactly who is behind their product. So I think that's the place that independent jewelers can play in this larger landscape. So I think the pressure is really for the industries, whether it's fashion, jewelry, and beyond, to really take a look at what consumers are asking for. And I think as a smaller brand, I have the ability to pivot quickly and listen to that demand. And I think larger brands are starting to pay a bit more attention to. And I like that. I like being a part of that conversation from that perspective.
Well, I think that, we're going through some incredibly huge evolutions in culture and society right now around the world. And I think these issues were sort of like for the hippies back in the 60s, right? And then still for like small amount of people. And then it sort of like got more popular and everyone was kind of like pretending to do it. And then in the last 5 or 10 years now, we're getting down to the nitty gritty of who is actually doing it and who isn't. And now it's even in fashion for some people to reject these kind of ideas. So it's just evolving so quickly. And I hope that all of you guys will shake it up and bring your perspective and force us all to keep changing and moving forward and having these like difficult fights so we're not just pretending to do something, but we are really doing something. And I think it's just going to, there's more pressure on all of us. I think the tariffs are catastrophic for luxury and beyond. And I think a lot of economic models are going to change and we're going to be going through some tough times. But I think that's a great time, oddly enough, to be a young person because you can really chart your own path and you can really push back on some of these systems that you're going to be stepping into that will need to be changed because things are going to be going so badly that people will be looking for new ideas. And so I hope that you'll get your courage and confidence together and bring some of your ideas and changes to the systems to help us keep evolving.
And I have one last rapid fire question. Which is, what impact do you guys hope to have on the next generation entering into the luxury industry?
I love this question, and basically is following exactly what you just said. It's like, I do hope you all bring your ideas and talk about them. What I found over the last number of years working with a lot of, you know, much, much younger people than myself, was it was a fascinating and incredibly exciting to me to hear what they had to say and integrating it into what I was thinking. So it's like, I think it's so important for you to be vocal and have the older people like me integrate it into what it is that we're doing so we can in fact really change. So I'm really excited about the future in the sense that I think that all of this, even this tariffs, are going to force us to be really innovative. So let's go for it.
For me, I co-founded with several people in the industry a nonprofit, and we work with the future of the jewelry industry. It's called the Future Jewelers Academy. One of the co-founders is here, Adrian Sonigo. And that goal really is to educate them at high school and middle school level about the jewelry industry and the luxury jewelry industry so that they can come up with creative solutions to make sure we do have a future in the jewelry industry as a whole. So that's my contribution.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that you'll come in and make us obsolete because your ideas are so interesting and pushing things forward so much, especially in jewelry. It's very old school still because the goods are so valuable and so small. It's still very much a family, patriarchal, father to son, business. And so as much as that can make there's very special things about jewelry. It's really ripe for new ideas and new people coming in with wanting to push us all forward.
Yeah, excellent. Do we have time for question and answers? Okay. I just want to remind everyone to look for someone with a mic or go up to one of the mics. We'll take questions.
Hi. Thanks for an interesting panel. So I'm going to bring a really different perspective to the conversation. I work in the waste management industry. I see the ugly side of sustainability not in play, quite frankly, to the degree that everyone is hoping it should be and could be it one day. I think that the industry of luxury, fashion, textile, et cetera, is at odds with consumer behavior. Less consumption creates less waste to manage, which impacts the environment. So I'm one of the things I haven't heard in all the discussions over the last 2 days, and I think the supply chain piece is an incredibly important and valuable discussion, but I haven't heard anything about the wrestling between sustainability and consumption and consumer education. I think that consumer consumption is a really big root of the problem. I see it. I've seen it firsthand. I look at it every day, and it's not a pretty sight. And there's a mindset in the consumerism of the world. It's easier, it's faster. There's a lot more being churned out more quickly. I love that Wendy took her 1990s jacket. I have a pair of 1997 J. Crew boots that I swear I'm going to be buried in one day. But I'm just wondering, like, what your view is on where the consumer education component fits in and how that feels in conflict with a business model of people buying things.
I know it's a tough conversation, but if the statistics that I've been looking at recently, we make about 100 billion clothes a year, and there's only 8.2 billion people in the world. So just think about the numbers. So what do we do with all that? And that's why I do think it's important to bring awareness to what do you do? What do you have in your closet instead of just throwing them out? What do you want to do with it? I know it's one person. I know it's only one person, but I know some of the companies are really trying to do things with what can they be doing with clothes that their customers don't want anymore. I'm not saying that that's dealing with consumption because it's not. But it is dealing with what we've made, which I do think is an important thing. And dealing with consumption is an issue. The truth is, I like to buy something new too. However, I want to make something new also. So it's like, how do I now wrestle that in my own mind? Because I know the statistics are rather startling. So I think we do need to educate people, and maybe they'll start to think about it. And it is, it's like it's challenging because now the system is also, if you think about it all the way through, the system is paying, the people in the supply chain to make the clothes that they're making. So if we make less, you might need less people. How do we shift everything so that we can take care of all the people in the world that we've already created this system? We have to shift it and change it. I don't have an answer. I really don't. But I do think that we need to be looking at it. And I think that the more we talk about it, we might come up with other ideas. Like right now, mine is, what am I doing with my own clothes? And I'm talking to everybody I can about what I'm doing. I'm also talking to everybody I can about the statistics I've been reading about 100 million clothes a year to 8.2 billion people in the world. It's like, what are we doing with this? How can we shift it and change it?
I want to jump in there because I think there's also a lack of infrastructure to close that loop with the end consumer, like you mentioning all this waste that you see every day with consumers. I think that it's also up to the entrepreneurs of today and tomorrow to find new business models to be able to close that loop. So if that means, creating new companies that are all focused on secondhand markets and being able to maybe bring all these post-consumer goods back to the factories to be upcycled again and have a new, breathe new life to the products like a private jeweler would with family heirlooms, the same thing needs to happen with fashion goods also. Great question. We have time for one more question. Oh, go right ahead.
Can you hear me? So I have a question about closing the gap between, we would all love to buy luxury clothes, but many people can't afford to buy luxury clothes. So how do you bridge that gap? I'm sure every single FIT student would love to go out and buy a Balenciaga or whatever, but they don't necessarily have the budget for that. So how do we address that problem of needing to buy more expensive, better quality clothes and not having the budget?
That's a great question.
I was just going to say, buying secondhand is also trending, and it's also cool now. But
somebody was saying to me yesterday, talking about what I'm doing, calling it the new vintage. And so it's like taking clothes and I'm not saying taking clothes myself and making them larger and selling them to somebody else, but maybe helping people, you know, maybe rework their wardrobe by using other fabulous fabrics also. It is challenging. It is challenging.
I think for me, it's about purchasing something made well the first time and really having that be the core of your wardrobe and then adding to it. I also am a big supporter of Rent the Runway. I said it earlier because I'm really trying to like push this ability of like, if I have a gala to go to, do I need to buy a brand new dress? No, I can rent one for that specific event. So I think it does boil down to your own individual consumer behavior. We all like new items, but I also like today I shopped in my closet and found something from when I used to work in fashion and was able to rework it.
Yeah, I think your point of buying something that actually is made really well, then you're able to use it. So you're going to spend more money on the thing that's made well. I remember when I was a lot younger and I did buy more expensive things than I probably should have based on my budget, but I had them for so long and I loved them. So I think that really is important. It was not, I did not buy something that's like, I have it today and gone tomorrow. I actually didn't operate that way.
I wish we had time for more questions, but if you want to meet us after the talk, we'd love to answer and hear more of your questions. I wanted to thank you guys so much for joining us for the first panel today, and it was a pleasure to share this time with you guys.
Before we wrap, I just wanted to say thank you for tuning in and being part of this conversation. If this episode sparks something in you, whether a new idea, a shift in perspective, or even a moment of reflection, I'd love to hear about it. These conversations are meant to spark something deeper, and it means so much when they ripple out into your own circles. So share this episode with a friend, follow us on Instagram at Responsible Luxury Pod, and leave us a review. It helps us grow this community of changemakers. Until next time, stay thoughtful, stay curious, and keep leading with purpose.